Thanks, Stick. I don't think I'll finish it up, but I'll move us another step in that direction. So, good morning, everyone. I want to just invite you to interact with each other first, and then we'll take a moment for prayer. So to start with, what I'd like you to do is just to answer one of those core questions we have as we first meet new people, right? We have kind of a list of things like, who are you? What's your name? Right? Get a little bit of identity. Maybe what do you do? And then maybe one of the next most common questions is, where are you from? Right? I mean, we've all had it asked of us many times. Every person here has asked someone else that question at some point. It's a pretty common aspect of how we relate together. So there's a lot of different ways to answer that. So we'll just try to get us all on one page together and just simply choose our answer for that to be where we first came from, where we were born. So find a location. I'd like you, you're probably sitting by family who may already know the answer, hopefully, to that. So invite you as much as you can to kind of spread your wings a little bit. Ask that simple question of maybe two or three people around you you don't know, and then have them ask it back of you. And all we're going to do is say, where are we born, right? Where are you from? And we're going to answer where we're born. So let's go ahead and stand up, meet some new people around you, get to know them, find out where they're from. Or not. All right, we're getting close. I will tell you, you can still talk to these people afterwards. You can have coffee with them. Go out to lunch, have a great time together. So what's interesting is that out of all the discussion questions I've ever given you in my years here, that has been the hardest one to pull you back from. Which I think says maybe a lot of different things about us. One, it says it's a really easy question to move into, right? I don't think anyone really felt too frightened by that, and it opens up a lot of other aspects of our lives that lead to a lot of follow-on questions. So totally apart from where we're going today, but if you ever want to live out that follow Jesus and you say, I want to enjoy people around me, it's not a bad question to have with you. You can ask it pretty much of people anywhere, and almost inevitably it'll lead to more conversation and more places to go, and you'll find some pretty amazing things. And you can, people you never met will open doors for you with that. So I'm glad that you have that opportunity here, and I love the conversations that we had, the friendship that we developed, the new connections that we have. It's kind of amazing to see. Anyone, like, find out something cool about someone else they didn't know before? Yeah, even just the place that you're from, you open some new doors to that. We try to begin sermons with a place of prayer, so I want to give you a chance to do that now. And you just ask other people, where are you from? So what I want to ask you to do is just to come before God, who's promised to be here too, with the same question. And say, God, where are you from? Can you take a moment to ask him that? Sometimes we're used to just asking you easier questions, maybe. The ones that find the answer is hard to discover. But we ask today that even if you don't give us the full answer, and maybe our minds can't even conceive that, that you help us to understand more where it is that you're from too. Amen. So that question has so much depth to it and can be answered in vastly more than what hospital you're born in or what town you're from, because it leads us to these deeper places, right? I mean, this question of where we're from digs into this idea of why are we here and what is our purpose, right? Our identity is caught up in our origins, which is why it's pretty common to look backwards into the past, right? Has anyone ever looked at any of your genealogy? All right, even just like grandparents, kind of pointing back a couple generations, where were we from? Where did we connect to things? Who did we kind of come out of, right? Anyone love to read history? Yeah, I love to read history too, right? That's a larger chronicle than your own individual life or own individual family, but it's where are we from as an American people? Where are we from even as a human race, right? Where have we journeyed in the time we've been on this earth? How have we conquered things or overcome things? What is that past like? in a little bit more technical areas, right? There's archaeology, which studies, again, where did we come from? Or even anthropology that tries to examine those root natures of who we are as human beings. And how did we get to this place? All of those are just common questions that we have that are essential to who we are in life. It doesn't matter what culture you've come from or what place you are in the world. Everybody asks those questions. So you can travel to any country in the world, and assuming you can speak a language that they can communicate with, it's a great question to ask. And it opens up deep and meaningful kinds of things. God knows that that's essential too. And so as God begins this whole kind of book of love letters for us, that in essence says, I would like to have a relationship with you, Bill. You know, Vera, I want to have this intimate relationship with you. He knows that in the beginning of that, a core part of that is saying, where am I from? Where are you from? Right? To build that relationship. And so as God begins that whole relationship with us, in the very beginning of the beginning, he says, I want to describe to you where I'm from and all of those kinds of things. And so Genesis 1, verses 1 through 4, kind of digs into that essence of where God is. We are going to spend 8 weeks, starting today, looking at Genesis 1 through chapter 11. So just 11 chapters over 8 weeks. It's a little bit more of a focused selection on those things. Because it's all about beginnings. By chapter 12, we moved on to Abraham, and things have narrowed down to just the Jews. The first 11 chapters are about all of humanity. And we'll discover the beginning of a lot of different things. The beginning of everything, right? That's what we have today. We'll discover the beginning of family and community and relationships and friendships and siblings. The beginning of gender and what that has to say to us. The beginning of temptation, the beginning of shame, the beginning of fear, the beginning of hope, the beginning of a whole lot of different things. So there is this image that you show up there that will remind us of this proverb, right? That the apple does not do what? Yeah. And so even though there are millennia that separate us from the most ancient human ancestors, right? And there are so many things that are different in our life, right? We have medical resources they could never even imagine. We have an understanding of the cosmos in our own human bodies that they don't have. We have technology to communicate and cell phones. We have internal combustion engines, all that kind of stuff. But the reality is the apple has not fallen far from the tree. And on so many of the most essential things about what it is to be human, the beginnings have incredible information for us. That very first marriage is profoundly informative about your marriage. Those first examinations of gender, the first examinations of how temptation functions are profoundly influential in us understanding how they function in our own lives as well. And so for those next 8 weeks, we want to go back to the beginning, right? Not because it's so ancient and dusty and old, but because it's our own lives. And you can change a name here and there, and suddenly it's your own story, and not a story of Adam and Eve or Noah or anyone else who was there before. So as we begin to look at those things, we come back then to this essential place of how everything began. There may be some, and I know Earhart is going to have his 100th birthday anniversary coming up in September. There's something in the bulletin about that. You're welcome to come and join in on that. So some of us here have actually been around when the Big Bang Theory, not the TV show, first came out. Right? And maybe you can not even remember back that far, but there was a time when that wasn't in existence. And science celebrated this moment that finally we got rid of the need for a God. Because we found this way scientifically that everything could begin in this one essential little point and explode out to everything that we have right now through this process of evolution over 13.7 billion years, etc., of whatever it needed to be. But now, if you read the most up-to-date scientific information that you have out there, you will find that the Big Bang Theory, again, not the TV show, has been debunked. So in the course of even Earhart's lifetime, for sure, we've seen this great kind of scientific understanding that will remove all need for religion and God in the world, go from this high point to being understood by scientists to say, well, that's not really valid or true anymore. One of the core reasons for that has been it never really got to the deepest question. The deepest question wasn't how could things be created, but why is there anything at all? Why does anything exist anywhere? Why isn't there just nothing? Because the big hole in the Big Bang is the most easy question to ask is what was before that? Or what started it? What initiated that? And in the time since then, as science has tried to come up with another answer, and I have the most profound respect for science. I love it. If I did not have a calling to be where I am right now, I would be a scientist because it fascinates me, and I read it as much as I can. But science has, at least as we experience it today, a bent against faith. It has a prejudice built into it that there cannot be a God. It's one of their underlying assumptions that they have. And so everything that they come up with has to have some solution that says we don't need a God. And so as we begin to understand that there has to be something before a Big Bang, even if you collapse everything in existence into one small little point and explode it out from there, you still have to answer why it got there. What caused it to explode? All those other questions that come out of that. And so as science has progressed farther and farther down that road, and I will just make a note for you for a moment, it'll be pretty short. We'll do a little bit of scientific stuff, a little bit of philosophy. If you don't want to swim in those waters, it's okay. We'll get to a simple answer at the end. So don't worry about it too much if you think you're drowning in the middle of that. It'll turn out okay. But if you want to dig a little bit deeper, these are some things that we can examine too. So as science has continued to examine that and recognize that we can't just come to that point, they've tried everything that they can to move beyond that. They said that there is no question of what happens before the Big Bang because time itself begins in the Big Bang. It's a part of the created or a part of the natural world that we have. And so there was existence outside of time that was before that. So we don't ask what was before the Big Bang. We just say, why was there anything at all? Doesn't matter if time began there or not. It doesn't matter at all. The question is, why is there anything? They push on to say that there's multiple universes, in fact, an infinite number of universes, which is how they get around the evolutionary problem of mathematics that statistically says that even when you have 13.7 billion years, statistically, you have zero chance of getting what we have now. With random mutations and whatever else you want to throw in there, it's not going to get there in 13.7 billion years. So they've had to create an infinite number of universes, and so we just happen to be in the lucky universe. Does that sound like science? No, it sounds as much like faith as anything else we have, right? So that's where they're coming about. They've even moved beyond those things to address quantum physics, which I understand most of you don't know much about. It's absolutely fascinating, really, really cool. Some great, incredible technology coming on the computing edge that will just be mind-blowing for where we go. But in the midst of quantum physics and what it understands is that sometimes things are both there and not there at the same time. It doesn't make a whole lot of rational sense to us, but it's kind of been proven over and over again. So what they say is that there was this moment when there was a thing that wasn't there, which was the universe, and then the thing began to be there. And I know that gets really painful for your head. We'll get out of here really, really soon. What I want you to know is it doesn't matter what science comes up with because that essential question always remains. Why is there anything? I read an article this week, too, that said that it is the rules of physics that have determined the world that we live in. And you don't need anything other than the rules of physics to get the entire world that we have, including quantum physics, everything else that it has. Right? So that question still remains. Why are there rules of physics? And where did the rules of physics come from? You don't have to fight out all those other battles. You can just back it up. It doesn't matter what they want to spout out. It doesn't matter how long they want to go on. It doesn't matter how deep the conversation goes, and you lose track of it somewhere in the middle of it. Wherever they end up with is their grounding point. All you have to do is say, why is that around? Because even if you just come back to the laws that govern our universe, laws of gravitation, laws of relative physics, and all the other stuff that we have, why are they there? And what you get at the end of all of that is an understanding that there is something beyond the universe. That's the core, unavoidable truth. And science recognizes it has no answer for that. And so it may throw out a lot of noise around there. If you're headed into college soon, you may pick up a lot of that stuff along the way. There's a lot of great things science does. But when it presses into that point, it has no information. All it can do is work in the world that we have, in the universe that exists around us. It can't step beyond that. But there is this understanding that we have that for anything to be around, there had to be something outside the universe that brought it into being. Aristotle grabbed that from way back when, right? 2,000 plus years ago. And he had this theory that he called the unmoved mover. Or the idea, sometimes it's called the prime mover too. It's used in different ways. Unmoved mover is the Greek, prime mover is the Latin, whatever that means to you. What it was the understanding that there's got to be something that began things. Not everything can simply be caused by something else, because eventually there has to be the initial cause. Right? The initial thing that gets things moving but didn't have something get it to move. And the answer that we understand on that, and I'm fine if someone doesn't have another answer, but the reality is there has to be something that initiated it. The answer that we have is found here in Genesis 1. It says, in that beginning, wherever it was, however far back you want to stretch, whatever science finds out about it, doesn't really matter. God. That fourth word is all that you need. Whatever it was, and whatever all the other details that get filled in the middle of there, the reason that anything exists at all is God. And that is foundational for us. It's foundational for God too. If you fast forward a little bit in the story, right, we're picking up at the beginning of our Bible timeline. And we have, if you're far over there, the scroll kind of gets in the way, but there's this globe sitting right over here, right? It's the earth. It's right there. And as we move forward in that time frame, and we come past the ark, and that's all that we'll cover in the next 8 weeks, and the apple's over there too, and we get to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. And then finally we get, after 400 years of silence, we get to the crossing through the Red Sea, and who's the guy that leads us through that? Moses, right? So before he leads through the Red Sea, when he's out in the wilderness and he's about 80 years old, so 20 years younger than Earhart, he sees this bush that's burning. And he's out of curiosity, goes and approaches it. And it's there that he meets this God who began everything. And it's the first time in all the scripture that God gives a name other than God. The word God that we have is pretty universal, right? Muslims can use that, and Jews can use that, and Hindus can use that, and Buddhists can use that. You can be anybody and use that word, right? It's pretty universal across the board, right? But it's finally at that burning bush that God reveals to Moses. He says, here's my personal name, my unique name that sets me apart from all the other gods that you know, that you have around you. And what is that unique name that he says? It's Yahweh in the Hebrew. Which means I am that I am, or I am who I am. So here is God, and he could choose, obviously he's God, he can pick anything he wants, right? Here's the name that I most want you to know me by. This definitive core understanding of how I understand myself, right? I mean, I have a couple of my kids that aren't fully satisfied with the name I chose for them, and they're like, I think I might like this name, right? We often don't get that right. God has the right to name himself however he wants. So here is God saying, if you want to know who I am, this is the center of my identity. And it is a statement that says, I exist of myself. I am that I am, or I am who I am. There is no one else that has made me. Right? We have last names that refer to somebody who made us. Right? And we carry that along with us. And it says, this is where I came from. But God is saying, I didn't come from somewhere. I didn't have some origin somewhere. I exist because I choose to exist. And it's a mind-blowing idea. But for God, he says, this is the essence of who I am. And I know it's a complicated thing to grab, but I think as we begin to journey into this relationship with God, he says, this is what I need you to understand. This is a cornerstone. If you want to relate with me through the cross and through the resurrection and everything else that goes on around it, at the center, way, way back before all of that is, I am that I am. I don't have a cause. I don't have a source. I don't have an origin somewhere. I'm not caught up in the world of the universe that you live within. I am beyond all of that. This is the nature of God. And it's the nature of us too. Right? I Am reveals a few essential things for us, both about ourselves and about this God that we connect to, right? So the first one is that this isn't us. I Am is not who we are. It's not us. We are not self-existent. Right? Every one of us is aware enough to say, there is a time when I was not. And if we humble ourselves enough, we can admit, there will be a time when I will end. Can you just acknowledge that to yourself? Say it in your own head. It's maybe one of the harder statements to make, but if you don't own that, then you can't relate to this God who's different. We do end. We began at some point. We end at some point. We are not self-existent. We are not ongoing forever and ever and ever. God is. And so we have this core difference already that God says, I am not you. I am holy. I am set apart. I am unique. You might be made in my image, but you're not made as I am. And I'm not even made, right? It's this absolutely different experience. And so that colors our understanding. And so we recognize, even as we read the book that he's given to us, I may not grab it all. I may not understand it. When he says, I am three in one, and that doesn't fit the world that we have and the understanding and the rationality that we have around us, we have to say, that's okay because you're not me. And maybe that doesn't work in the whole universe that I've built or that I live in and exist in, and I could travel for billions of light years in any direction and still be within. But outside of that, that's what it means to be I am that I am. This God that has Father, Son, Holy Spirit wrapped into one. So it's different than us. God is not like us. And we say over and over again, one of the core reasons we gather is again to understand a different way of looking at the world. Because God sees things differently than we do. And that's good and that's helpful and that's great for us. So God is not us. It means that God is the cause of everything. There's nothing that is that did not have its root cause eventually in this nature of who God is and where things come from. There's nothing that caused him to be. And causation is the root of purpose. Right? Whenever you choose to cause something to be in your own life, it's because you have a purpose behind it. Right? You cause a sandwich to come into existence at lunchtime. It's because you have a purpose for it. Right? I mean, everything that we cause into being. You cause vacation plans to come into existence. There's a purpose behind that. Right? You cause to purchase something. Whatever it is that we do, there's always a purpose behind it. So this again reveals for us that if God is the cause, not a cause, but the cause originally, then the source of purpose is where? It's in God. If you really want to find the purpose for your life, where do you need to go? You need to go to God. Because the purpose is not rooted in your own heart. It's not rooted in your own feelings. It's not rooted in those things. Because those didn't cause you to be. Those are secondary, right? Your feelings and your emotions, your attitudes, your presuppositions, your whole personality was secondary to your existence, right? It didn't happen before you existed. You existed, and then those things came along afterward. So your purpose is outside of your own personality. It's outside of your own desires. It's outside of your own feelings. It is rooted in the nature of God. If you really want to find your purpose, you have to move outside of yourself. Right? And that isn't something that we get at all. But that is that otherness of God coming in and saying, hey, I have the right understanding for you. And almost all of you can raise your hand at some point and say, I haven't fully followed the purpose of God. We get that. But at some area, I did choose to. And I found that there was goodness and blessing and riches when I chose to do that. When I listened to a purpose that was bigger than my own heart or outside of my own existence, I found there was the right thing. Because purpose doesn't come from us, it comes from God. If God is outside of all that is and the cause of that, then he is also the owner of it. And all of our concepts of ownership that we have are flawed. At best, they are reflections of God, and that's the best way to understand them. You do not truly own anything because you didn't cause it to be. Right? Any more than my children own the things that I have gathered in my house, right? They didn't cause those things to be. They didn't work for them. They didn't provide the money for them. They might act like they own them. I might grant them some degree of ownership rights in some category, but the end result is that I own them. But all that is simply a metaphor too, right? Everything that is in existence around you is owned by God because he formed it and he made it. And ownership grants you the right then to determine what is done with something. I come back to my kids all the time, right? I get to choose what happens to the things in my house, not my children, because I own it, at least more than they own it. God gets to choose what happens to things in this world because he owns it. God gets to choose what happens in your life, in the time of your existence, in your body, because he owns it. God gets to choose the pathways that you should take and the pathways you shouldn't take because he owns time and experience and all of those things around. That is the nature of him being I am that I am. There is nothing that you can point to, be it from the farthest star to the closest thing that you have around you, that was not originated out of God and therefore owned by him. So out of the message today, there's not a do. There's not an application that asks you to do something differently other than maybe just to understand differently. To approach your world in a way that says, again, I recognize that there is something beyond all of the universe, or it wouldn't be. I acknowledge that I'm not that thing, that I will end. That alone, to wake up every day and say, I know I have an end, can change the way that we live in really good ways. Right? We live with appreciation of that. We begin to invest in the things that matter. To recognize again on this daily basis that my purpose is not my own. If I want to fulfill my purpose on August 28th, 2016, I need to have a connection to I am that I am. And then to recognize that the ownership of things is not mine. I am at best a steward of them. I've been given gifts and I am to use them as my owner desires. There is profound humility that comes with this, which is why science hates it. The great challenge in science is that when you discover things that no one knew before, you tend to get proud. But are we really discovering things that no one knew before? No. Somebody knew it all before. And we have the joy of discovery just as kids have the joy of discovering things as they grow and learn, but it's not that it wasn't known before. So there is a breath of humility that God invites us to. He says, if you want to invest in a relationship with me, there is a lot of good that can come, but humility is that grounding foundational point. Will you acknowledge that you have an end? Will you acknowledge that purpose is rooted in I am? and that the ownership of everything is found in I am. Will you pray with me? Yahweh, it is nice to meet you. And nice to hear where you're from. God, these ideas are rich and they're deep. And it really requires you to root them in our hearts. And so I ask that you would remind us today that we had a beginning and we will have an end. But in the midst of whatever span that is, you have seen us, you have noticed us, you have pursued us in your Son, Jesus Christ. And so even though there is a transitory nature in our lives, there is a God who sees and cares. That is incredible. And we acknowledge this morning too, God, that the purpose of our life, our choices of careers, our choices of spouses, our choices of what to buy, of where to go, of what to do with our lives, of the choices to be made are not our own. The things that fill our houses and our closets are not our own. And we thank you that someone wiser and more good than us defines our purpose and the use of all things. We acknowledge you, God. We acknowledge you, I am. And we thank you that we can speak to you and that you've offered a relationship across this separation that should exist between infinite and finite, between God and created. And so we walk into that relationship now in worship, using the mouths that you've formed, the lungs that you allow to fill with oxygen, that we might express back to you your goodness and your greatness, and to honor you as the I am.